As AI continues to revolutionize our world, there's a critical conversation we can't ignore: AI safety and security. And that's where HackerOne's AI red teaming comes into play, rigorously testing AI models to prevent them from being misled or exploited. HackerOne employs over 2 million ethical hackers, and 750 of them specialize in prompt hacking and other AI security and testing. So HackerOne isn't just theorizing, they're actively safeguarding AI's future. Just recently, a team unearthed over 100 vulnerabilities in just 2 weeks. So whether you're at the helm of a startup or steering product innovation at a large company, it's time to prioritize AI security. Visit HackerOne.com/AI for more. Again, HackerOne.com/AI.
This episode is sponsored by porkbun.com. Porkbun is a refreshingly different domain name registrar that's different from the other ones like GoDaddy or Namecheap. They've got low prices on hundreds of different domain extensions. They've got everything from .com domains to really cool ones like .pro, .dev, .xyz. Every domain name at Porkbun comes with tons of freebies too, like SSL certificate, whois privacy, DNS, URL forwarding, and hosting trials. Because why pay for things that should be free, right? All these incredible features and tools are backed by incredible support, 365 days a year, and more 5-star reviews on Trustpilot from real customers than anyone else. Look, you can get $1 off your next domain name from Porkbun and see why they're the best domain name registrar around by using our code. Just go to porkbun.com/rocketshipfm24. That's porkbun, porkbun.com/rocketshipfm24. You'll save $1 on your next domain. This episode is brought to you by Gigantic. At Gigantic, you can level up your product skills through live, small group, cohort-based trainings. We're incredibly excited to welcome you to our next cohort of our product strategy training, kicking off in January of 2024. This course will take you through the frameworks that product leaders use at companies like eBay, DoorDash, Groupon, Rent the Runway, in order to scale their teams. It's taught by Ben Foster, a friend of this podcast, who is the former chief product officer at Whoop. So come join us. Go to gigantic.is. That's gigantic.is. And save your seat for our January cohort. Your potential is gigantic, and we're here to help you reach it. Go to gigantic.is to reserve your seat today. So, Mike, when I say disruption, what comes to mind?
Probably like Uber. Like, they came in as outsiders and like totally disrupted the transportation industry.
And if I say innovation, what comes to mind?
So I would say, like, going way back, like some of those early tech pioneers like William Shockley or the Traitorous Eight.
Yeah, they were innovators, certainly. But you could say they were disruptors as well, right? Because of their connection to the first venture capital deals and because they broke off from the major players at the time. But what if we looked at like Hewlett-Packard, who once established in the 1970s, really pushed innovation forward in various industries?
Okay, so like, what is the difference, really?
So I think for today's purpose, right, we're looking at disruption as something that uproots an industry like an Uber, right, coming at it from the outside.
Okay, so innovation would be more like an iterative advancement from within an industry. It's still revolutionary, but building on top of an industry versus like turning the whole industry on its head. I don't know. Yeah, I could. It kind of seems like all we hear today is disruption. Like, everybody's disrupting something, whether it's transportation, hospitality. It feels like everybody just wants to blow everything up.
Yeah. Most of these world-changing ideas, oftentimes they're a little more than just a better way to get food delivered. But there are people working on real solutions to real problems. Today, we're going to talk about two people who are innovating inside and slightly outside of one of the most heavily regulated, slowest-moving industries, healthcare.
Welcome to Rocketship.fm.
In season 4 of Rocketship, we are diving into everything product and growth.
Rocketship FM is produced in partnership with Product Collective.
We're your hosts, Michael Saka
and Mike Belcito.
So, healthcare. Okay, I couldn't imagine someone coming in and disrupting healthcare at this point. It's like, that's hard.
I know. It's really hard to imagine. But you know, one of our guests today, he comes close to kind of disrupting an aspect of healthcare. And we can let the listeners decide which side of the defense he really belongs on.
Okay. So who are we talking to?
So I talked with Sasha Bahata, the director of the Institute for Health System Solutions and Virtual Care at the Women's College Hospital in Toronto, about why innovation in healthcare is just so slow.
Change is actually pretty slow. And there are sometimes good reasons for that, because obviously when you think about how medicine has evolved over the years, it's often due to, you know, trial and error, and has been about how things have always been done in tradition, which is ultimately at times can be good, because we don't want to move too fast on something that might actually have a negative impact on patients. But in more recent years, what we've started to see is that slow pace of change in healthcare has butted up against, you know, the massive sort of changes in technology that we've seen, like around in other industries, you know. So whether it be, Uber and the cab industry, you know, the development of smartphones, the use of messaging and social media platforms has really created a tension in the healthcare space, as patients are now beginning to say, why can't I email my doctor too? Or why do I have to call the office to get an appointment? So you're starting to see some friction sort of develop between what patients' expectations are towards care and service in other industries versus healthcare.
That makes perfect sense, especially considering what's at stake.
Yeah, right. I mean, we don't want to put people's lives in jeopardy over moving too fast, right? But when we think about it from the patient's perspective, like, their experience hasn't really changed in 50 or 60 years, right? We've made a lot of progress in medicine and technology, but the experience of actually seeing a doctor stayed relatively the same. But we've seen innovation in other aspects of a person's life, and now they're starting to expect the same change inside of the healthcare system.
Sure. So, for example, a lot of, the traditional model of people seeing a family doctor, a primary care doctor, has been somebody, you know, having to make an appointment or go to a walk-in clinic and then physically see a physician. More recently, there have been a number of healthcare companies that have sort of cropped up in Canada in particular, although, you know, there are various sorts of these that have popped up in other countries as well, that, you know, for a fee, you can actually see a doctor via telemedicine. So basically what would happen is you would log onto your computer and you would get a virtual visit or a telemedicine visit with a doctor that was remote to you. And they would be able to sort of, you know, assess your problem, hear your story, and potentially be able to, you know, make a prescription or make a care plan for you. Kind of both of you from the comfort.
So I imagine this had to go through some sort of approval process. Like, some board must have set regulations about these virtual visits.
Surprisingly, no.
Yeah. So the answer is, it's kind of the Wild West out there. There hasn't been a ton of guidance to date, as far as I know, around what makes a virtual visit. And what's, because in Canada, you have the Canada Health Act, which sort of says you can't really bill privately for services that are insured. Right now, virtual visits are not insured. And so, you know, basically they can be charged outside of, you know, the different provincial governments' insurance plans. And so there really isn't a ton of rules around it yet. And so it is a little bit like the Wild West.
Okay, this is feeling a little disruptive.
Well, you're right. I mean, I think we'd be getting a little bit ahead of ourselves, but these virtual visits are still being conducted by licensed doctors who've been licensed through the traditional channels. They're just seeing patients in a new way. Doctors, they used to make house calls. Then they moved almost exclusively to their own offices. Now, they're basically making house calls again.
This time, just virtually. But no one's really measuring the effectiveness of this currently.
Well, yeah, that's kind of true, right? I mean, Sasha's trying to. So his work at the Women's College Hospital, they're trying to figure out how do we measure this. The problem is figuring out how to measure it has come a little bit slower than the technology itself.
What we do is we evaluate how technology gets implemented into the way that healthcare is delivered and look at whether or not that implementation of that technology actually did the things we hoped it would do, meaning improve quality, improve access, and reduce cost.
Help me understand some of the timelines with this, right? So you want to measure virtual care. How long are you running these studies and looking at virtual care and its effects on the market?
So that's a really good question, because the problem with the way that virtual care, digital health has been sort of evaluated to date, we think is probably not the right strategy for this really disruptive technology. So if you, in healthcare, we traditionally take a very conservative approach to how we evaluate whether a drug, for example, has an impact on improving people's health. And those are called randomized controlled trials. And they require a certain number of patients, some people getting the drug, some people not getting the drug, and they can take years.
This is fundamentally different than how we're taught to think about problems in the tech industry. 4 to 5 years of testing, a company's out of business.
Right? That they're out of business in 4 to 5 months.
So how does Sasha see this colliding with how the tech industry works and how healthcare works? So
the short answer to that is I absolutely think a lot of the innovation is going to come from outside of healthcare. The challenge is that healthcare is such a context-specific and specialized industry that there needs to be some sort of synergy with the system itself. So it means that the innovators... coming in and saying, you know what, we're going to blow this thing up and we're going to turn it on its head, but we're not going to talk to anyone in healthcare, I don't think will work. I think it's going to be this symbiosis of where the tech sector, other industries will kind of come in and say, we want to help. How can we work with you? Meaning folks with doctors, you know, policymakers in the healthcare system to make the system better. And I think that symbiosis is going to be really powerful.
We'll be right back after a quick word from our sponsors. This episode is brought to you by Yahoo Finance. Wouldn't it be great if you could see all of your investment and retirement accounts in one place? With Yahoo Finance, you can consolidate your views with multiple accounts into one hub and access the expert analysis you need to tend to your entire portfolio with confidence. Honestly, this has been a lifesaver for me. I've used Yahoo Finance to consolidate all of my various 401k and investment accounts so I can see everything all in one place. And it makes it incredibly easy to manage. So if you're struggling with that, check out Yahoo Finance. For over 25 years, Yahoo Finance has been the brand behind every great investor. You can securely link your brokerage accounts for a unified view of your wealth, including your 401k and other investments. A comprehensive perspective is what sets apart a great investor, and that's how Yahoo Finance ensures that you have the insights to look at your wealth in its entirety. So go to yahoofinance.com. That's yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination. Now, back to the show. So you're probably asking, what does innovation look like in healthcare driven by people or organizations outside of the healthcare giants?
I am actually asking that.
Well, you are in luck. I spoke with Josh Landry, the founder of Figure One. Have you been on Figure One?
No, I have not even heard of it.
So, well, today you are in luck. It's a social network of healthcare professionals who share case photos. It's in like an Instagram-esque feed, and then they leave comments, help, advice. And I have set us up with an account so you can log in and experience it for yourself.
Ah, nice.
All right, let me send you.
All right.
So go to, I believe it's figure1.com. Here's the username and the password.
Okay, I am in.
Okay, so what do you see?
So, all right, confirm your account, rocket ship. And then I see it's like there's just an image right away. It's like an X-ray of somebody's, I mean, I could see their spine going all the way to like their pelvis area. And it says, patient with fever and hematuria and chilling, no more information. And then there's comments.
Yep.
View the two comments. Somebody says, the entire right side looks abnormal. Right bladder wall is obscure. Right side, large air fluid level. Ascending colon looks enlarged. Is this a bowel perforation or severe right hydrophorosis with a hydrotherapy?
Yeah, and they're trying to solve the problem that the patient is having. And some of the stuff gets pretty gross. I mean, for me, for doctors, I'm sure it's not.
Well, and it does feel Instagram-y, right? Like you can, there are tags, like infectious diseases is a tag, and you can choose to discuss, follow, or save. This one has two comments, 13 follows, and 1,547 views.
That's engagement right there, you know? Like that's, so, I talked to Josh about how large this network is, because it does feel, when you log on, it feels very active.
I mean, there are now millions of users around the world in 192 countries using Figure One. And so this really has been a global event since the very beginning. We had rapid uptake initially in North America, and then of course spreading to Europe and Africa and Asia eventually as well. Australia was one of our earliest markets, maybe third or fourth. And so really we have connected all the continents since the very beginning of our...
That is nuts. I never realized there's this global social network connecting millions of doctors all over the world. But I have to say the first thing that comes to mind when we're discussing healthcare and technology is compliance. Like I'd have to imagine that this would get really, really messy.
Yeah, it's surprisingly, according to Josh, it's not that bad.
So Figure One's images don't contain any private information at all. There's no personal health information, no PHI on our app at all. And what that means is that HIPAA only applies to those pieces of information. Essentially, the philosophy that we selected was the best way to keep a secret is not to know it.
And so, I like that.
So in order to make sure that we don't accidentally release any private patient data, we elected not to request any, and in fact, to insist that users remove it all before it gets uploaded. So images have to be scanned and reviewed both by the uploader and our privacy moderation team to make sure that no names, numbers, hospital ID numbers, birthdays, dates of hospitalization, and maybe a dozen other pieces of information need to be absent before that image can be uploaded. And on top of that, all the digital data that goes along with a modern digital photograph, that all gets erased before the image gets on the server as well.
Wow. And are you doing pre or post review on these images? Like if I take a picture and I upload it, it then goes to your compliance team that needs to officially sign off on it before it's posted? Or is that like a post review of the pictures that are currently live?
So we actually do both. We do a privacy moderation viewing as well as educational content viewing and moderation in advance of the image being public. And then after that, once the image is public, any user who has a concern about the image can flag it, and that will remove the image from circulation and give us a second look to make sure if that user has a concern, we look at that right away.
All right. It doesn't sound like they're breaking any rules, hiring lobbyists to rewrite compliance regulations.
They're certainly not Ubering it.
But they are disrupting the heck out of medical education.
Yeah, on the education side, they are certainly changing the way that doctors and students get to access real-world cases. But on the innovation side, they're actually collaborating with companies in the industry to really push the capabilities of what Figure One can do. Here's Josh again, and the he that he's referring to is Sasha, who you heard earlier in this episode.
He and I are collaborating on a project to bring machine learning capabilities to electrocardiogram interpretation. And so that's something that we had some media featured about that. There was an article about it by Fast Company maybe 2 weeks ago or maybe 3 weeks ago now. That was just basically described how we're going to be able to teach. What Figure One is doing is essentially teaching cell phones to read ECGs to be able to assist the doctor or nurse who's looking after that patient. The electrocardiogram being a device that was invented about 115 years ago, and its availability is nearly universal. So the job of getting an ECG machine into every hospital and healthcare clinic is essentially done. The job that we have left to do is to teach people how to read those tests. It's almost like putting printing presses everywhere, and then all you have to do is teach people to read. But essentially having access to safe and reliable interpretation of a test that is so vital to detecting so many life-threatening diseases, you know, that access is what's going to drive outcomes in places that don't have regular access to the most specialized of cardiologists. Right? Most of the world lives outside of a place where you can just call up an experienced cardiologist and have them on the phone, you know, in an instant. And so delivering that kind of access to healthcare knowledge.
All right, that is impressive. Yeah, I thought we were going to be talking about healthcare payment and coverage models. And instead, we're talking about spreading knowledge across the world that will save countless lives moving forward.
Yeah, it's not all dollars and cents, right? The thing is, in these heavily regulated industries, innovation and disruption are less of a line in the sand and more of a gray area. Even disruptive apps like Figure One partner in industry to push things forward. In this sense, they're not feared like Uber is within the transportation industry. They truly are doing the R&D for healthcare.
Which is what some would say the original benefit of venture capital in Silicon Valley was before we got all obsessed with disrupting everything.
Right. So what does Sasha see as the next big thing in healthcare? Well, it's not all that different than what many of us see as the next big thing everywhere.
I mean, I think AI is going to be a major game changer. We don't know how it's going to be a game changer, but I think it will. I have a couple ideas. So one is, you know, what we have in healthcare is a lot of data, but not a lot of knowledge about how that data can be turned into usable information by providers, right? Like, so I'll give an example. You know, I have a patient of mine, I'm a cardiologist, and I have a patient of mine who has an ECG, he has an ECG gizmo that affixes itself to his, like it works like a little ECG, and it plugs into his smartphone. He's like kind of a leading edge kind of guy. And I follow him for, you know, for a heart arrhythmia. And I know that his heart arrhythmia gets worse when he drinks a lot of coffee and maybe drinks too much alcohol. And every time he does that, he gets heart palpitations, and then he takes his ECG using his smartphone and he emails it to me. And then I look at it and I say to this patient, well, maybe you should just stop drinking coffee for the next while and wine, and it will go away. And it usually does. But the interesting thing about that is there's all this data now from wearables, from, you know, data that we have in hospitals, that's all around us about a patient, even not just like physical data, but where they live, air pollution levels, you know, all kinds of environmental data that all could, you know, we don't know yet how to integrate all of that in a way that will allow us to use it to make predictions about a patient's health, about when a patient might be getting to the point where we need to intervene because they might be decompensating for some reason. And I think AI will be very powerful from an analytic perspective in helping us develop prediction rules for patients' health into the future.
It's a small world after all.
It most certainly is. Look, up in the sky.
If
you want to find out more about rocketship.fm, go to rocketship.fm. It's pretty simple, right? Make sure you subscribe to this podcast wherever you listen to podcasts so you don't miss future episodes in this series. And if you like today's episode, tell a friend.
Or two friends, or a lot of friends. We would love it if you would spread the word. And when you can, go to rocketship.fm and scroll all the way down and leave your email with us. We'll let you know about upcoming episodes, but we'll also get you in on a Slack channel with thousands of other product people and all sorts of other good stuff that we know you'll be interested in.
So go to rocketship.fm and sign up for our newsletter. If you enjoy this content, leave us a quick review or tell a friend or share the link on Twitter. Anything helps to get the word out about the show. We really appreciate it. We'll be right back here in just a couple of days.
By the way, that's a crazy long name, huh?
Right?
Imagine telling everyone your title. All right, let's see.